thank you very much. Lovely to be here. Lovely to be at a paleo conference. My goodness, this is really exciting for me. Just hands up. How many people have actually got autoimmune diseases in the audience? Okay, quite a few. How many of you think you might have autoimmune disease but haven't actually been officially diagnosed? Okay, you know it takes around about 10, 15 years before the first signs of an autoimmune disease to actually appear in the body, even though you may well have the antigens and the autoantibodies. 10 to 15 years. And there's a lot you can be doing before you get that official diagnosis to make quite a difference. So Jerry's already given a little bit of description about me. I'm UK-based. I'm based in Reading, in Berkshire. I'm trained in functional medicine, functional nutrition. I'm also a chef, which is quite a good combination. And I'm author of quite a few books, including quite a few books on functional nutrition, particularly looking at the underlying issues that may contribute, for example, to gut imbalances and autoimmunity. And we run a lot of paleo cookery days, including hands-on days for kids, which are brilliant fun. And I still see clients as well in Harley Street. So my next book, which is actually not quite out yet, it's out next year. I'm very privileged to have Dr. Mark Hyman endorse this book because it's very much a functional nutritional book. But if you are interested in taking a more functional approach to looking at the underlying imbalances in your body and how that's contributing to your signs and symptoms, then you need to get these ones, particularly the Eat to Get Younger, which we will be signing later today. So what I want to talk about, and it's all linked to your gut and how healthy your gut is, but I just want to give a quick overview of autoimmune conditions, how many we think there are. And then we're going to have a look at the link between the triggers and the state of your gut and why the gut is central for you in terms of addressing your autoimmune condition. I'm also going to look at how certain dietary components may be actually making your symptoms and your gut much worse, which will link obviously to what we want to talk about in terms of how a paleo style of eating may be more appropriate. So we know that with autoimmune diseases, really the definition is it's an inappropriate immune response of the body against substances, tissues, organs in your body. In other words, the immune system is mistaking some part of your body for a pathogen. Most of the time, our immune system should not really be reacting. We should be in what's called immune tolerance. We should be able to recognize between self and non-self. And in autoimmune, that gets mixed up. And that's where our problems arise. Now, we know roughly there are about 80 classified autoimmune diseases. It's estimated there's at least 170, 180. And when we look at autoimmune diseases, just to put in a bit of context about how important they are in terms of the health of our nation, we know that they roughly, this was in 2006, this is 8% of the United States population have a diagnosed autoimmune condition. That's around about 24 million people. Now, to put that in context, that year, 9 million people had cancer, 22 million had heart disease. So collectively, autoimmune diseases have a financial, massive burden on our health system. And here's just some examples. Some of them you'll be familiar with. I myself am a celiac, so I know that my risk of getting other autoimmune diseases is higher if I don't sort my health out, and my gut health in particular. But did you know things like Addison's, alopecia, Crohn's disease, Graves, Hashimoto's is another big one, endometriosis. These are autoimmune conditions. Multiple sclerosis. I see a lot more clients with MS. Psoriasis, lupus, vitiligo. All of these are autoimmune diseases. And what we know is just how important it is to diagnose autoimmune diseases early, because signs of those antibodies will be present in your system 10 to 15 years before you show any symptoms. And in the meantime, we could be doing something about that. Often, it's not until our symptoms are so severe that we will have any tests done, any investigations. And often damage, in some cases, is irreversible. So how do we develop an autoimmune disease? We know from the research that there are three components of developing an autoimmune disease. There is a genetic susceptibility. Now, in some conditions, we know quite clearly what those genetic markers are, and we can actually test for those. Celiac disease is a classic one. Now, just by having those genes doesn't mean you will get an autoimmune disease. There are loads of people that have the HLA DQ2, DQ8 genes connected to celiac disease. Not all of them are going to end up with celiac disease. So there's something else that will also be involved in the development of an autoimmune disease. And what we know is that a permeability, normally in the gastrointestinal tract, but it might not be, it might be the lungs, it might be the skin, it might be the blood-brain barrier. The number of clients I now see who are involved in quite extreme sports, even rugby, and their blood-brain barrier has been compromised. We can test for these now. There is normally a breach in your intestinal permeability. And then there also has to be a trigger. And this could be a myriad of triggers. So it could be a dietary protein that you're eating. Gluten is a big one. And not just the celiac disease. It could be an infection. It could be a gut infection. It could be a viral infection. It could be dysbiosis. It could be a change in the microbiota of your gut. You may not actually have an infection, but the actual balance of bacteria is out. It could be stress. We know stress has a profound effect on not only our health, but also the actual junctions in our intestinal barrier. And even nutritional deficiencies can also be a contributing factor. Interestingly, this study by Pollard was looking at why is it that women are much more prone to autoimmune diseases. And one of the things he was actually looking at was the number of toxins from cosmetics and perfumes and creams that women expose themselves to. And he was suggesting that actually overloading our body, particularly the liver, with these sort of exoendotoxins was actually quite a significant contributing factor. And there's a huge number of infectious agents. I'm not going to dwell on this, but I just want you to be aware that it's not always just a food or stress or medications. We now know there is a massive link between a lot of these. Some of these are parasites, blastocystis, diatom amoeba. Some of these are viruses. Epstein-Barr, for example, is well known to be linked with Hashimoto's. Chlamydia, well known to be linked with MS, for example. So we know that a lot of these viral, bacterial, yeast, parasites can be a significant trigger to different autoimmune diseases. Proteus is well known for rheumatoid arthritis. And they're just developing tests to try and actually see if we can identify that more clearly. So how do we actually get the autoimmune disease? Now, we know that we have to have some sort of genetic predisposition and then some insult on the body. And that may be medications that were on, the surgery, the viral infections, the proteins, whatever. This then will often lead to inadequately digested proteins. These themselves, some of these, particularly gluten, can cause irritation and inflammation in the body, including the epithelial layer of the gut. And this will lead to, and we'll talk about this a bit later, to intestinal permeability. That then leads to a build-up of endotoxins and also signals to the GALT, our gut-associated lymphoid system, which is our immune system in our gut, to activate. And often the overexpression, the exaggerated expression of our immune system in our gut then often leads to the immune system mistaking our own tissues, our own cells, as foreign and should be attacked. And then we get the development of an autoimmune system. And the reason I'm mentioning the gut is because we know now from a lot of the research that having intestinal permeability may well be the major mechanism for the development of an autoimmune disease. So it's really important you understand how healthy is your gut. If you want to arrest and reverse an autoimmune disease, we need to have a healthy gut. Now, in a healthy gut, we have an epithelial cell layer, and we have what's called, effectively, these cell layers, almost a bit like bricks, being linked together with mortar. And they should be nice and tight. And when we want to absorb nutrients, because we need to absorb nutrients, then those micronutrients can enter either through the epithelial cells or between our cells in those little mortars. And then the tight junctions will close and we will prevent pathogens from actually entering. So there's two roles of the gut, is to help with absorption of micronutrients that we need, but also to prevent pathogens and toxins from entering into our blood circulation. And as they enter through the blood circulation, they have to go through our gut-associated tissue, which is our immune system in our gut. You know, 70-80% of your immune system is in your gut. So it's a massive area for a response, for an immune activation. And of course, when we have a breakdown in our epithelial layer, you can see there where the tight junctions aren't quite so tight, or there's actually damage done to those epithelial cells, including, for example, the villi, then not only do you malabsorb, so you actually become very low in certain nutrients, but you're allowing potential toxins and pathogens in, and that's where you get that immune activation. So the gut becomes dysfunctional. And we now know that often a precursor to developing the autoimmune disease will be the development of intestinal permeability. And that may not happen overnight. That may take many, many years before you actually get intestinal permeability. The trouble is you don't actually have to have any digestive symptoms to have an issue with your gut. So often for people, they may have bloating, they may have alternating diarrhea, they may have abdominal pains, they may just feel very heavy and full after eating. But for some people, they don't have any digestive symptoms at all. Doesn't mean that you haven't got a leaky gut or intestinal permeability. Any signs of inflammation in your body, food sensitivities, chronic pains, aching joints, foggy head, migraines, headaches, depression, fatigue, all of these have been linked to intestinal permeability. So don't just assume, because my gut's okay and I don't seem to have any problems, it's fine. It may not be. If you have an intestinal permeability, if you have leaky gut, the chances are the balance of the gut flora is also out. And often that can be a big precursor to ongoing inflammation. Our microbiota can shape how our immune system responds. And so one of the ways we can actually look at, I'm not sure why that hasn't come up, but going back to intestinal permeability, we can test for intestinal permeability. So you may well have heard of Cyrex. Don't know if anyone's used Cyrex. They're, I would say, probably one of the leading labs in the world for autoimmune diseases. And they specialise in testing for leaky gut, gluten, cross-reactivity, food allergens, but also they can screen your blood to find out what antibodies you already have. And it's a very, very sensitive test, and it can screen pretty much most of your organs and tissues. I'm happy to talk to people individually about those tests, but we often use RA2 to actually show whether someone's got a breach in their intestinal permeability. Now, what about the triggers? So if you have intestinal permeability, why? What was it for you that has caused that breach in the gut? Now, for a lot of people, it is gluten. We know that gluten is a type of prolamin. It's a very difficult group of proteins to digest. We know that. That's why it's not in the paleo diet. It's estimated 1 to 3% of the population will have celiac disease. If you live in Ireland, Western Ireland in particular, if you've got this type of colouring, be warned, you probably have the genes for celiac. You've got a much greater risk of getting celiac disease. There are certain genetic populations. Some of the Italians, for example, have much greater, ironic, with all that pasta, but they have a greater propensity to get celiac disease. We, however, know that there's another estimated 6 to 10% of the population that is what we call now non-celiac gluten sensitivity. This is now a recognised condition, and again, we can test for it. RA3 will distinguish between celiac, wheat allergy, and non-celiac gluten sensitivity. And it's relevant because if you do have celiac disease, you again have a much greater risk of having another autoimmune disease, particularly Hashimoto's and type 1 diabetes. And likewise, if you've got Hashimoto's, please get yourself tested for celiac disease, if you're still eating gluten, of course. Now, gluten can cause a lot of different issues for the gut. It's not just about celiac disease, it's not just about the production of antibodies, which is very common. It actually interacts. Every time you eat gluten, it will interact with your tight junctions. Those junctions between those cells, it will interact with and cause them to open. And in genetically susceptible people, and a lot of people, those tight junctions will remain more open than they should. And then they potentially will be allowing toxins, pathogens in. And gluten can cross either through those little cells, the enterites, or they can actually just cause those tight junctions not to close at all. Gluten, like a lot of carbs, will also disproportionately feed potentially harmful bacteria in your gut, promoting their growth and causing dysbiosis. That in itself can cause inflammation, which can then damage the gut further. So it can interact in many ways. Now the trouble is, the amino acid sequences of the gluten peptides is actually very similar to a lot of the organs and tissues in your body. And that is why it seems to be that gluten is often associated with a lot of different autoimmune diseases, not just celiac disease. Now this one you can see the figures. This is the RA3 that distinguishes between celiac disease, non-celiac, and wheat allergies. So just look at the things in the yellow and the pink. Those ones are markers that are out of range. So that person, it's one of my clients, is seriously reacting to wheat, just wheat on itself, having a very positive reaction. And then lower down, they're reacting to certain peptides of gluten. Remember that the GP test in the UK only tests for MER33. Now, we know that 50% of celiacs actually react to other peptides of gluten, so they're not even tested for. This will look at a whole range of different peptides, different gliadin peptides. And then towards the bottom, those are markers for celiac disease because they're indicating tissue damage. And transglutaminase 2 is linked to the gut. Transglutaminase 3 is normally linked to the skin. And transglutaminase 6 is linked to the brain. So we can actually see quite specifically where gluten is affecting you. You can see there as well, there's something called glutamorphin. This is a reaction that some people have when they eat gluten, and it almost makes them feel that they're addicted to carbs, but particularly bread. And it's because gluten can have a morphine-like effect in the brain. So it's actually attaching on to our receptors, similar to morphine. So we feel good when we eat bread, but then afterwards, we sort of want more, we keep feeling addicted. And I see this quite a lot in my autistic clients, for example. Now, there's another issue with gluten, because there's a question that often arises. Why is it that celiacs, when they take gluten out of their diet, still don't actually feel that good? And when we do studies on them, 2 or 3 years later, even after getting gluten out their diet, their gut hasn't healed. So why is that? If they've taken the trigger out, why is it that they're not feeling any better and they're not healing? Well, the research is now suggesting that gluten potentially actually cross-reacts with other foods. So your body, you've taken gluten out, but your body is still consuming casein, for example, or dairy foods. And those amino acid sequences in dairy are actually very similar to the gluten amino acids. So your body still thinks you're eating gluten and carries on that autoimmune reaction. So we now know that there are a number of foods that cross-react with gluten. So if you know that you are reacting to gluten and you've got an autoimmune disease, please consider whether you are still consuming a different food that's almost having the same reaction. And we know that, you know, even minute traces of these cross-reactive foods and gliadin will still trigger an autoimmune response. You have to get them out 100% for good, for life. And this study, which was done in 2013, they actually looked at some of these cross-reactive foods. And they actually proposed that these other foods need to be treated in the same seriousness as gluten, i.e. you need to get them out, because the body is still attacking itself. There is still inflammation. And these are, again, it's another lab test if you wanted to do it. The ones in red are the ones that have been shown to cross-react. So gluten, obviously, and all the gluten grains, all the fractions of dairy, particularly casein, but even butyrophilin can do it, oats, yeast, corn, rice, millet, and coffee, they're still debating. A lot of coffee that you buy is actually contaminated with gluten. So they don't think it's the actual coffee proteins. They actually think it may be because it's actually cross-reacting, cross-contaminated. But of course, there's other food triggers for the gut. It's not just about cross-reactivity. Lectins, which are found in not just gluten, but also grains, and that includes the pseudo-grains, so quinoa, legumes, beans, pulses. We know that these also, in some sensitive people, can damage the gut as well. Wheat germ agglutinin is probably one of the most researched, loads of papers on the damage that wheat germ agglutinin can do. But this type of glutamine is also found in things like soya. It's found in the nightshade family, even tomatoes, for example. And for some, I'm not suggesting for everyone, but for some, lysozyme, which is found in particularly the egg white, can also be an aggravating problem. Again, you can test for these. If you are still eating those foods, you can test for them. So if you're not sure whether eggs are good for you or not, yes, you could do an elimination diet, or you could just do a lab test. Now, why is that important? It's important because if we can heal the gut and restore that gut permeability, then we know that in some cases we can reverse or alleviate the damage done by that autoimmune condition. One of my boys, I've got three children, one of them has quite a rare autoimmune disease called an IgA linea bullous. He hasn't got any symptoms now. When he was two, we put him on a paleo style of eating. No symptoms at all now. Great Ormond Street just wanted to give him high steroids for the rest of his life. You can, if you catch it early, you can reverse and certainly alleviate a lot of the ongoing issues with autoimmunity. So, and this is the major focus of the new book, this is what you need to do to get your gut back. And I will be around later if you want to talk to me more specifically about this. I'm not here to promote supplements. I will be mentioning a few, but I'm not here to start selling any supplements. I'm a chef. I like to focus on food. The first thing you have to do is remove your triggers. And for some people, it may be more than one. You might think, oh, it's just gluten or it's just dairy. I just need to go on a paleo diet. You may have a virus. You may have a parasite. You need to know what are your underlying triggers. Are you on medications? Are you taking PPIs? Have you had surgery recently? Are you under a huge amount of stress? What are your triggers? Get them out. Because it's no point doing any of the other parts if you've still got that trigger. So that's the first thing you need to do. You then need to replace with certain optimal nutrients. You need to make sure your body is getting the nutrients it needs. In order to heal your gut, it needs huge amounts of certain nutrients. Zinc, for example, which is often low in many people, particularly as we age, it's very important for stomach acid, often low. You might need to support yourself with digestive enzymes to help you break foods down. You need to re-inoculate your gut. You need to flood it with the right sorts, the right strains of beneficial bacteria. You need to then put in certain key nutrients that actually facilitate the repair of the gut lining. And you also need to consider whether ongoing lifestyle approaches are just ending up damaging your gut further. So the first thing, get those processed foods out, get the sugars out, get the hydrogenated oils out, get the inflammatory oils out, get those beans pulses, get those grains out, and avoid particularly any food you know that you are reacting to. Even if it's paleo, if you're reacting to it, get it out. Don't eat a high-carb diet, we know that. If you are eating a lot of nuts and seeds, and let's face it, if you're on a paleo diet, often you are, for some people they may benefit from soaking those. They can be quite difficult to digest. And obviously check also about other additional gut infections. I'm putting this here because you need to lower the fire in your gut. You need to lower the inflammatory response. And we do that by including things like bone broths, collagen-rich soups, some of the anti-inflammatory foods, which we know are leafy greens, omega-3 fish, matcha tea, tullus, mushrooms, particularly shiitake, reishi, fermented foods, garlic, ginger, turmeric. There's so much research on these. You need to flood your body with these anti-inflammatory foods. And don't start burning and char-grilling everything. If you want to avoid inflammation, you avoid the production of what we call advanced glycation products, which happens when we really heat things very high. Include more bitter foods to stimulate your natural digestive secretions, your stomach acid, your digestive enzymes, lemon juice, apple cider vinegars, bitter greens, the rockets, the watercress, coriander, that really stimulates digestion. Make sure you're getting plenty of zinc. It's rich in meats, it's rich in nuts and seeds, particularly pumpkin seeds. It's really important for stomach acid. Fermented foods. Not only do they flood your body with probiotics, but they also are great for stimulating digestive secretions to help you break the foods down better. What you don't want is great big proteins of food hitting that gut and aggravating that gut. You need to break them down. And that's why I've mentioned mindful eating. Because if you're someone that just runs around eating on the hoof, then your body's not even ready to start producing amylase and lipase to break your foods down. You need to give your body time to do that. And we know that your microbiome, your probiotic bacteria, are vital for either promoting inflammation or lowering inflammation. We want them to lower things like IL-6 and raise IL-10, anti-inflammatory mediators. And we know that in a whole range of studies, just supplementing either celiac, Crohn's disease, colitis, with certain probiotics can profoundly change the inflammatory markers in their gut. Simple strains of Bifidobacterium, Lactobacillus rhamnosus, Acidophilus GG. These have all been documented. So that's why I always try and encourage clients to get fermented foods in every day. If you have blood sugar imbalances, then stay off the water kefir kombucha initially and focus much more on the fermented vegetables and things like the kefir, whether it's coconut or milk, depending on what you can tolerate. And then you may need to supplement. So I've just put general guidelines in here, and this is all based on scientific research. But it will vary depending on your own gut flora. But one thing I would say is, if you have gut dysbiosis, if you have harmful pathogenic bacteria, do not start giving your body loads of FOS, loads of inulin, loads of fibres, because you probably end up incredibly bloated and feeling quite sick. You need to get the gut sorted first before you start feeding the bacteria. And then you can start giving your body the foods, the substrates, to help feed those beneficial bacteria long term. Because a lot of the supplements you take are transient. You need to inoculate your gut and establish a good gut flora for life. And the best way of doing that is to give them the foods they need. So stewed apples, soluble fibres, the polyphenols. So green tea, fantastic way of really boosting. So a bit of green tea and your kefir, really good combination. Blueberries, walnuts, we know that these can stimulate the growth of beneficial bacteria. And some of the soluble fibres as well, so things like yams, sweet potatoes. But not if you've got gut dysbiosis. Wait and get the gut sorted first. Now, this is a long range of supplements. I'm not saying I would give a client all of these. I'm just telling you what the research has shown in terms of the key nutrients to restore the gut lining. So if you know your gut lining is damaged, these are some of the key nutrients your body needs. You may not be able to tolerate all of them, but these are the ones you need to focus on. So glutamine. Your gastrointestinal tract utilises so much glutamine. A lot of fitness guys will know about glutamine for recovery, but boy, your gut needs a lot of it. It's a massive metabolic fuel. But glutamine can feed candida, and it can also actually promote inflammation if you've got still gut dysbiosis, which is why we always say treat the gut triggers first. If you've got a pathogen, get rid of it before you start chucking glutamine in your gut. So get that sorted first. But glutamine is a brilliant way of supporting the gut to heal. Now, colostrum, yes, it's milk-based, so not everyone can tolerate colostrum. But the amount of research now being done on colostrum is phenomenal. It's now used a lot by football teams, rugby teams, to aid recovery after intense exercise. It's rich in so many proteins, so many peptides that are actually crucial for modulating, balancing the immune system. So it's known to reduce inflammation, and it's actually shown to help repair intestinal permeability. It's one of my top choices. If someone can use colostrum, then for goodness sake, use it. It's widely available, but make sure you know your quality, because you need a good organic grass-fed source. Fish oil, particularly with tocotrienols. A paper came out a couple of days ago on the use of tocotrienols and lowering inflammation in the gut. The combination is very powerful for suppressing inflammatory mediators like Kappa B and lowering inflammation and restoring the gut. Now, we know from genetic testing now that a lot of people have changes in their, what we call the IL-6 genetic change, which means that their ability to utilise omega-3s is not as great as someone else's. So they would need almost double the amount of omega-3 as someone else, which is probably why in some of the studies some people respond and some people don't. You can get your genetic markers tested for if you've got an issue with IL-6, which is interleukin-6, then you may need more omega-3. And if you've got a marker in IL-6, you're probably more prone to things like colitis anyway. Turmeric. The amount of research on turmeric is vast now, from Alzheimer's to Parkinson's to colitis to gut healing to rheumatoid arthritis. but certainly for lowering inflammatory markers. And we need to get the inflammation down. So turmeric, whether you use it in food, whether you're using it as a supplement, really try and get it in daily. And there's just some research about how important for loads of chronic illnesses, and we know that inflammation is really the silent thread for most chronic diseases. Vitamin D, again, a lot of people have SNPs in their vitamin D receptors, which means they need more vitamin D than someone else. I know quite a few clients that know immediately when they stop supplementing because their levels start falling quite quickly. This time of year, we all need vitamin D supplements. You're not going to get enough. Unless you're eating liver and having cod liver oil every day, you're probably not going to get enough. Get yourself tested. We know that it's really important for the tight junctions. And we also now know that vitamin D deficiency seems to be linked to an increased risk of getting an autoimmune disease. So get your vitamin D up. And then vitamin A, which is often ignored, often avoided, is actually a crucial vitamin for the immune system. Really, really important. And from a food source, liver, cod liver oil, grass-fed meats are probably your best source, and then obviously beta-carotene rich foods like carrots, sweet potato, pumpkins at this time of year. But it's not just about food. And I'm going to finish now, but one of the key things is that if you are still doing certain lifestyle factors or stress that is contributing to, for example, raised cortisol, then that in itself can be damaging to the gut. We now know that lack of sleep, lack of melatonin has been linked to intestinal permeability. They've just done a study on supplementing melatonin in people who have fatty liver disease and they had intestinal permeability, and when they supplemented them with melatonin, they helped to restore the intestinal permeability. So melatonin and sleep, absolutely crucial as well. So we need to make sure that our lifestyle factors are also supporting our gut healing. And here's a quote from Jeffrey Bland, who I absolutely love. Throughout most of your life, the most profound influences on your health, vitality and function are not the doctors you have visited or the drugs, surgery or therapies you have undertaken. The most profound influences are the cognitive effects of the decisions you make about your diet and lifestyle and the expression of your genes. It's not just about one part of food and eating. It's about the whole lifestyle approach. And that's really important for reversing autoimmune conditions and obviously healing the gut. So I'm going to end it there. Thank you, everyone, very much. And I think we've probably got a few minutes for questions. I will be around later as well.